Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. Today is our Memorial Day celebration 241. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. We'd love to hear your questions and comments. Dr. Tim's already on the phone with us as well. David's not here yet. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, sweetie. Glad to have everybody with us today. It is an awesome day in Sarasota, Florida. Bright sunshine, absolutely beautiful. I'm in a little bit of a strange situation, so I may have to leave the show on just a minute's notice. We've had a key break off in our van, so I'm standing outside of a locksmith shop who may want to speak to me at any moment. So if I have to leave the show, I'll ask Jeannie if she'll take it over, or if David or Tim are here, maybe to support Jeannie in getting into questions and thoughts and answers around the Aramaic idea of forgiveness. We have an invitation for you that we offer in every show, the opening, and that is the invitation to be part of the team that changed the world. How are we going to do that? How are we going to change the world? Well, the request is that each day you find something in your life where there's some form of hostility or fear that you respond to with projection and blame someone else. You respond with threat, with anger, with fear, with, you know, whatever that is unlike love, where you give up your human life, which is what heals you, to do something other than function from human life. You know, the measuring stick we use is, you know, for human life is just hold a newborn child. You know exactly what human life is. And if that newborn child wouldn't do a behavior, then I'd offer that the cost to you of doing that behavior, whatever it is your human life. And so our invitation to you is to reclaim your human life. How are you going to do that? Well, if you go to our website, www.whyagain.com, on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says Download Worksheets. And the first four links under that section will give you the whole story of the forgiveness process, precisely and exactly how you remove whatever it is in you. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be grief, it could be rage, it could be sadness, it could be threat, whatever it is. And it will match whatever your power person did to you that you hated the most. So if you lived under rage, then when the stress is up and the chips are down, the tendency will be to rage. If you lived under threat, then the tendency when the stress is up and the chips are down will be to threaten. And you think it's something that protects you, but in fact what it does is it gives you the original of that hate, that rage, that fear, that threat, and causes you pain. But because we're so good at denial, we hide our pain and the fact that we cause it ourselves, and we pretend that it belongs to something outside of us. So what we're looking to do is to invite every mind on the planet to get to the point where they're willing to take the level of responsibility where they do nothing but function as the active presence of love. They do nothing but function out of a true human life. That's our invitation for you today. And so go to whyagain.com, right-hand side, download worksheets. You will find the whole story of exactly how to forgive. So, Jeannie, with that introduction, does anyone have any questions in the chat room, or do we have any callers? Of course, our phone-in number is 646-200-4169. If anybody has a question for us, we'd love to enter into a conversation with you and hear exactly how it is that we can support you.
Right.
So, Jeannie, do we have anybody hanging out there?
We've got several people in the chat room and on the radio, but nobody's got their hand up yet.
Okay. Well, then, let's look at some of the principles. Again, our call-in number, 646-200-4169. We would love to hear your question. We'd love to enter into direct conversation with you. And if you're shy about that, we invite you to let go of your shyness. If you and I were in the room alone, would you have a question for me? If you had just been to a workshop and you had the chance to pull me aside, would you pull me aside and say, gee, Michael, what about this? Well, your question is everybody's question. And the gift that you give to everybody when you ask that question is that you get to give that answer to everybody. I don't know what your question is, but you do, and we invite you to please ask it. Give us the blessing. Give yourself the blessing of asking that question. 646-200-4169. Hit 1, and that will put you in the queue. Jeannie will know you want to talk to us, and she will turn your telephone on. So give us a call.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
I just want to add to what you're saying with a concrete example. In the group, last night, Tuesday night, we watched the video and then we opened it for questions and then we asked if anybody wanted to do a worksheet. And someone who was brand new to the work and brand new, the first meeting in attendance, decided to do a worksheet. And they did a worksheet on aggravation or annoyance from an interaction they had with coworkers. And
right.
And by the end of the worksheet, when she did the release and asked for help to see what inside of her was causing it, she got images of her father telling her something about how she could always do something better.
Mm-hmm.
And she internalized the message as, you're never good enough, so you always have to try harder.
What a stress.
Yeah, and this had absolutely nothing to do with, you know, ostensibly, on the logical perspective, with what she was annoyed with in the first place. So she got the gift of seeing that all that was going on between her and her coworkers was an interaction that resonated a deeper pain and frustration and another issue that she can work on from her childhood. And she was grateful.
Right.
But the real gift was that she was willing to do that in this group, and several people in the group resonated with that same issue and got to see the power of the worksheet, and two other people were able to help her by summarizing what happened and distract. Somebody wanted to do problem solving about the interaction between her and her coworkers. And a third person in the group said, but slow down and take a look at it. She just discovered that what was going on had nothing to do with her and her coworkers. It had to do with her internalized problem from the interaction with her father when she was younger. So great power, great love and support, and shifting of frustration and annoyance that happened simply because somebody was willing to take a chance and say, okay, I'll do a worksheet on something that happened. So if you have a question, it's never, you're never the only one with that question, and you may just be the only one brave enough to ask it, so please go ahead.
And for those who might not know who Dr. Tim is, Dr. Tim is a psychologist up in Chicago who for the last 6 years have been doing a support group. And last night, I assume you're reporting on last night's support group. And when you say simply willing to do a worksheet, my input would be, you know, there's that African proverb that we've talked about so many times that says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, and that there was a field of safety from these people who have been working together for 6 years under your tutelage. There's an energetic safety that opens a space, and that's such an important part of the whole process of healing, is that space of safety. When one is in the space of fear, of threat, of stress, where there are 1,000 goals going on that they refuse to cancel, that they hold to tightly like it means life itself, those goals are actually the key to death itself. They're the key to us giving up our human lives and refusing to reclaim it. And so for this woman to have the courage to step forward in that space and to pick up on the safety of the group and the support of the group, and to choose to be safe instead of going to resistance of the story of, you know, well, yeah, but, you know, they have to change, and it's outside of me, and I have nothing to do with it, and if it doesn't change, then I can't fix me. And, of course, and that's the whole game of this non-being mind. It's always got a story. And its story is always about how something outside of it is the key. Major, 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 mega error. Something outside of you is never, ever, ever the key. It can be the support, but it's never the key. The key is always inside of you. It's always under your control. But if you cling to the non-being story that, no, something outside of me has to change first, and are willing to move into some form of threat or intimidation, and you give up your human life to do that, stop it. Stop giving up your human life. Reclaim your human life. Soften that space inside of you. You know, that you go back into the ancient scriptures, and they described exactly why such things as divorce happened. And what was it? It was because of the hardness of your hearts. Why do people threaten? It's out of the hardness of their own hearts. Why do people break their word? It's out of the hardness of their own hearts. Why do people want to problem solve instead of heal? It's out of the hardness of their own hearts. Why do the healing crisis go on and on and on? It's because of the hardness of one's own heart. It's never up to anybody else but you. And so we're here to support you 1,000% in learning to open that space where the tenderness of your human beingness, and that's not an easy thing to do in a tough world, in a world where there isn't a space. It's, you know, I love that song of Vincent Van Gogh, "This world was never meant for one as beautiful as you." That Vincent Van Gogh had that tenderness, that space of being that was threatened by everything around him. And because he refused to be responsible for his own threat, it seems like it's something outside of us. And so I'm going to, as I said when I started the show, I was going to perhaps have to leave because I've got a problem with the lock, and the locksmith is ready to talk to me. So, Jeannie, Dr. Tim, would you guys be willing to just take over for a few minutes while I talk to this gentleman?
Sure.
Certainly.
Gracias.
Okay, so wanted Michael to be on this as well, so he'll just have to pick up the recording on it. But, Tim, personally, right now, I am in a situation where I know that what I feel is inside of me, and that is mine to deal with and mine to handle. But I'm also requesting some external changes until because I'm not to the point where I can deal with it. And it's like I use the example of Peter walking on water, and the storm was going on around him. As long as he kept his eyes focused on where he was going, he could walk water. But the storm overtook, and he started looking at his surroundings, and he sank. And so some of my surroundings are like a storm right now. And so I need some external changes to help me until I can get to the point where those things don't matter. And so what is your opinion of requesting some external, I know that's problem solving as we call it, but some external changes until we get to the point where we're strong enough to walk through it? I know that ultimately it's internal changes that need to be done.
The input I would have for you first is that you're making statements as though you're absolutely certain. And the first thing that I ask people to do is, instead of making the statements as though they're absolutely certain, make the statements as though it feels this way to me from where I am now. So instead of saying, I need external changes until such and such and such, say, it's feeling to me as though I need the external changes until such and such. Then, if I'm doing that and I have within me this total calm, total love and acceptance and compassion, then I'll be able to evaluate the situation so that I'm able to accurately assess, do I actually need this, or is it just triggering something in me that makes me feel as though if I don't get that, something horrible is going to happen. So if it's triggering something in me from an emotional level and I'm feeling stuck or trapped or overwhelmed, then there's a lot of good work for me to do on stuck and trapped and overwhelmed. Does that make sense?
It does, but my question is, Ben, is there a point where we can actually, though, ask for that and it be appropriate to ask for that?
Well, it's always appropriate to ask for what you feel you need. So, you know, it's always appropriate to ask for what you feel you need. The next question is, what happens when you ask for it? What does it stir up in you in asking? Have you been afraid to ask for it? Did you only ask for it after you agonized about it for, you know, several hours or several weeks? If you were agonizing over it, then there's work to do about what prevented you from simply asking for what you felt you needed right away when you feel that comes up. So that's another thing that work I can do. The other thing is, when I ask, what gets stirred up in me and in whoever I'm asking it from and in the relationship? If it's nothing but love and compassion and support, then there's no extra work to be done there. They're simply moving forward with, as you're talking here, the problem-solving or decision-making process. If there's any emotion that's less than love, then there's good work that can be done there. And sometimes it has to be done as the decisions are being made. And sometimes if I've been stirred to anything less than love, at an intensity probably above a 5 on a scale of 0 to 10, then it's probably not a good idea to make those decisions right now, because my intelligence is obscured by the intensity of my emotions. It's taking me out of the space of, as Michael calls it, my human life and that space of love. And so there are a lot of factors here, and you would have to get better at reading what's the level of upset you're feeling when you ask for what you need and it has to go to a negotiation instead of simply you instantly get everything you need. If you can go into the negotiation and still feel loving and feel supported and feel good about whoever you're negotiating with, then go ahead into the negotiations. But if you ask for what you feel you need and someone says, well, let's discuss this, and you're instantly triggered to feeling, you know, this person doesn't respect me, they aren't listening to me, they're abandoning me, they don't really care about me. If any of those thoughts or emotions are coming up, then there's good work to do before you go on with the negotiations. Does that make sense?
It does. So is anybody else out there been in a situation similar where you feel like something external is causing something internal, and you have questions about how to handle it? We'd love to hear from you. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 to be put in queue. I think David just joined us online as well. Hi, David.
Well, hold on, David.
Okay.
Because if that's making sense to you and there's no other caller calling in right now, let me relay something from my current situation that's been happening over the past few weeks, and how I'm learning about that what gets stirred up in me in the interaction with my significant other really isn't about her, it's about my old interactions that haven't been resolved. So one pattern that's gone on recently is my partner saying, this, this, and this needs to get done and be decided. And we don't need to go into the particulars, but these are things that she wants me to do or decide upon. And my response has been to feel overwhelmed, to feel that her, or having thoughts, that she's being unreasonable in the time frame. And I have felt myself shutting down and pulling back. In doing worksheets and having other emotional energy support, it's been very clear over the past 3 weeks or 4 weeks that I've had this work done that it keeps going back to when I was quite young and I had a grandmother who was cold and distant and angry to me. And it seemed like no matter what I did, she wasn't happy with me. So here I am in a relationship today as a 57-year-old psychologist feeling as though I'm doing everything right that I know how to do and I'm being a nice guy and I'm doing loving and all this other stuff. And it feels like these requests or demands from my partner are wiping out and negating all of the good about me. Now, she's not saying that at all. She's acknowledging the good about me. But when she says, but then this, 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 it pushes this button in me is a way to talk about it. It stirs up a feeling in me. And so in doing my work, worksheets, tapping, and this other energy work that I do called the neuroemotional technique, having it done to me so that I'm the subject and I'm clearing out old energy and stuck patterns, several times it's gone back to that deep conflict between the 3 and 4 and 5-year-old Tim and his grandmother, who was just never satisfied with whatever he did. So then in this past 3 or 4 days, I have found myself in conversations with my significant other and feeling completely differently about the interactions. I'm not feeling as overwhelmed. I'm not feeling that I'm being discounted and not loved, and I'm feeling warm and loving towards her in a time when she's feeling the need to be supported. In a situation where just a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I felt like I just need space, I need to get out of here. In a very similar interaction just in the past few days, I have felt warm and connected towards her. And nothing has changed in terms of the list of things that she's saying needs to be done or the list of things that I'm saying needs to be done. Simply because I've been able to tune into the intense emotions that come up in me in these interactions, and rather than look at her and say, she needs to change, grab the feeling I'm having and do the work to uncover what is my thought, what is my past energy trauma that I haven't dealt with that's producing this in me. So I'm just here to tell you that in just countless times over the past 7 years doing this work, I find it time and again, time and again. My logical mind tells me I'm right, the other person's wrong. But if I'm feeling sad, hurt, scared, upset, confused, or overwhelmed, I've learned to stop and say, boy, I hope I'm wrong. Even though my logical mind is telling me, no, you're right, this is right, you know what you're doing. If it's leaving me feeling a negative emotion, I hope I'm wrong. I turn that over to some higher power, some greater intelligence. I say things like, I forgot what to ask. I'm not going to make any decisions on my own. I'm going to ask for help from the Holy Spirit, from God, from the Christ mind within me, whatever I want to call upon. And if I do that with the conviction that my real state of being is that energy of love, every time over the past 7 years, it's worked out differently than I ever could have imagined. Because, as I believe, because I'm focused on me as the source of my experience rather than blaming someone else or something outside of me for that experience.
And I totally agree with that, and I totally understand. And I mean, even in my own situation, it's like I totally know that it's all inside. However, like, you know, okay, using the situation with you, if you hadn't been able to get to that total peace space, would it not be okay to say to your significant other, you know, okay, I'm working through this, and I realize that this is old energy from my grandmother or whatever. But until I get through this, you know, realize that the demands you're making on me is really stirring up old issues that I haven't dealt with yet, and I'm not there yet. So until I get that handled, you know, perhaps we can make this adjustment or something. So it's like still recognizing that what it's bringing up is my own feelings, my own reality, and yet there is a true actuality going on. There are situations that are in the actual world, not just in my reality. And, yeah, they're big triggers. And, yeah, if I were able to walk water, they wouldn't bother me. But they're, like, overpowering, and, you know, that's my own issue, too, and my own thing to work with. And so is it not appropriate to request until I am at this point that, you know, for me to get through this, I need some outside assistance here?
Well, as I said, yeah, I think it's always appropriate to request what you feel you need and then just try and stay tuned in to the internal emotions that get stirred up with you when your partner doesn't instantly say, okay, let me meet those needs, or your partner says, okay, let's negotiate this, because you can't really make progress in or through the negotiation until that emotional intensity is low enough that your logic can be in the picture to help you assess it. So, yes, I think it's always appropriate to ask for what you feel you need, but also it's appropriate for me to do that, and it's also important for me to keep monitoring my emotional intensity level and understand anytime it gets up about a 5 or a 6, I need to call a timeout and lower that, work through that within me before I'm going to be able to negotiate well or communicate clearly or really take responsibility for what's going on inside of me and have all my faculties together in that decision-making process. Okay, that's just what I wanted to say. I wanted to share that it's this other
thing
come up for me recently and how powerful it's been just in the past few days to have gotten through that work and have a whole different experience of my partner and our situation, even though nothing has changed externally.
Right.
Okay, maybe we should say hello to David.
Hi, David.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, David. Hello.
Hi. Just driving, and it's it's storming pretty good here, so I'm just listening to everyone and letting you know I'm tapped into where everybody's at.
Well, welcome. Drive carefully.
Yeah.
Jeannie, anybody on the phone?
There's several people just listening, several people in the chat room. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, that puts you in queue to talk to Michael. And there was some question about the radio being, or the internet being a different, let me put a mute here. There's a lot of background noise going on. I'm assuming that David on the road. Yep,
yep.
There we go. So I've got him silenced. Okay. We do have a hand that's up right now. Anyway, what I was getting ready to say, there was a question about that the phone and the online version of the show was different by a few seconds, and that's true. If you're listening on the phone, you're listening live time. What's called streaming, it has to go through a process before it hits the online version. So online, you're going to be about 20 seconds behind. And so we've got two callers. The first one is area code 702. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Michael and Jeannie.
Hi, who do we have?
It's Stephen.
Oh, hi, Stephen. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm here with Claudia, and we're on our way to Las Vegas. Claudia's driving, so I can talk.
awesome. Well, Michael, right at this present moment, I don't know how long you've been listening, but he's at the shop getting a key unstuck out of the van. So this is like the third time this has happened, so there's something that we need to learn about this key and this van. But so he is right now talking to the locksmith, so he's not on the air.
That's okay.
With us, him and I are here. So
yeah, I can talk to you, Tim.
This is Dr. Stephen Andraki?
Correct.
Welcome.
Yeah, we are still doing our work, and we're still doing our classes in Pahrump, and this year's been terrific, starting out a new year with the most people we've had, and people coming back and seeing a lot of good positive changes. So I think that there's little I need to say about what we're doing besides the fact that we're doing it, and that anybody who's listening should get inspiration from that. And it can be by example and by teaching and by letting people know that there's an opportunity to do something different than what you've been doing can make all the difference in the world. And so I think that that's just a vote of affirmation that anything is possible if you have the interest and desire to continue to work on it.
Wonderful. It's certainly been our experience here. And how many groups do you have going? How many people are in your groups now?
We do it twice a month, and recently it's been, I think it was 11 at the last one. So that's pretty good for us to get these get the people coming in. We have a lot more who commit that they're going to come in that don't show up, but we're always happy for anybody who does show up.
And how long have you been running the group there?
A year.
Wow, that's great. That's a great size group after just a year.
Well, we're always getting new people, and we're attracting them through the practice. And I've got a physician's assistant who is just learning it. And of course, Jeannie and Tim and everybody knows that people gain their knowledge at different speeds. But my new physician's assistant has been listening to me explain things to the patients that come in. And after 1 week, I asked her what she learned. She said that with issues with her and her boyfriend, she finally figured out it wasn't him. It was all up to her. And that's a pretty dramatic change for something that she's lived with for all of her life and never had the opportunity to understand before. So just with that opening, the logical opening, without having to all of the extra work for going through and removing all the processes, just to realize that there's another way to do it, I think is a truly amazing development.
Yes, that's wonderful. And as Michael talks about, energetically, the more that we get people to do this work, the more it opens the space for other people to do the work. And there seems to be just a plethora of people in this past year who are being introduced to the work and getting it almost through the first presentation. I know that for me, I think I get people in the group who are understanding the work as well as I did after 2 or 3 years after just one meeting. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, we've seen some people who pick it up and other people who are resistant to it, but as long as they come back and see that there's a possibility to think something different, to react differently, and just starting with the logic that the door is open to continue to do the work and at their own speed and whatever they need to do.
Yep, and we would support that, and we're just so pleased that you're willing to put in the time to keep the group going and create that opening and that opportunity for people. You know, I presented in my work, I'm a psychologist here, and I tell people, if you know anybody who doesn't have insurance or doesn't have the money for therapy, let them know about this group, because for a song or next to nothing, and even the church lets people come even if they can't contribute, they get the same kind of powerful tools that I teach people in my therapy office. So it's a fabulous thing.
Sure is. And of interest, NPR Radio, it was yesterday morning, they spoke about SSRIs and how we really don't understand how these medications work, and there's no proof that they work. And they even mentioned that behavioral therapy, and this is similar to cognitive behavioral therapy, can be as effective. And I think that there's, with science backing up the fact that doing your own work without having to take a medication is an option for some people, and obviously some people aren't going to do it, like some people aren't going to diet and exercise and need to take medications. There's an opportunity for people to do some work and not need to take the medication and learn to feel better.
Yeah, that was a fabulous report. The person who's been studying the idea that how an antidepressant can work, if you put it in simple enough terms and give people a simple enough story about how it might work, just that helps them get better, which talks about the power of intention, the power of what they call the placebo effect, that Bruce Lipton likes to call the power of belief. And behind it, the science isn't there. There's no science that says that depression is caused by an absence of serotonin in the brain. It's the fact that some people have their depression lift if they take a medication that provides some more serotonin to the brain doesn't prove that the lack of serotonin is what caused the depression. And I'm constantly working with people trying to get them to understand that the outside events in my life, the way I've learned to interpret those events, and my body and brain chemistry, these three factors are always interacting. And without taking any medications, if I change my outside events dramatically, or they get changed for me, or I change the way I interpret them, I can have a dramatically different brain chemistry in moments, let alone years. So they're always interacting. And if I do the worksheets to clear out old beliefs and old traumas, you better believe my brain chemistry can change.
Well, just somebody coming and asking for help is a certain move that a lot of people don't, and believing that any type of medical provider can give them some assistance means that they're on the first step. And then to know that they have an option to take a medication or to do something different just adds to that. Those people who don't even seek help, then hopefully the radio show and people who've had the experience can get them interested in just to bypass the need to come in and to ask for an antidepressant to start to do the work that that may make a dramatic difference. It's not to say that everybody should skirt the issues and problems. There's sometimes other things that we can do for people. But to have options available, and hopefully people who are listening, to realize that is a great asset for their health and their mental health.
Absolutely. And one of the hardest things for us to do as humans, at least in this culture, is to ask for help. And it's a huge first step, and it takes you farther than you could imagine just to say, okay, not only do I have a problem, but I'm willing to go ask for help. Rather than just keeping the same pattern going and hoping for different results, I'm actually going to do something different. So, any other comments, any other breakthroughs you've witnessed recently?
No breakthroughs. The other comment that is the most interesting to me is that people are always in a state of denial, especially even if they're coming and asking for help, and they have in their mind what they're looking for, and they sometimes don't want to look at anything else and to say that they have no other issues to deal with and that they don't have any unusual stresses in their life. And that continues to interest me how our culture, I don't know if it's worldwide or if it's American culture or where it comes from, that say that, no, really, I don't have any real problems. I just need something to help me. And to get past that, sometimes it's the first major breakthrough for the person to say that, yeah, maybe there are things that I can look at and change and to make this start to move and get better.
Yeah, that's certainly a tough one. It's if I can't admit I have a problem, then there really is nothing that can help me from the inside or the outside.
Correct. So everything is going well. I always hope that there are people who are in the group that are listening, and I frequently tell them if they can't listen to go through the archives. That's a wonderful benefit that's set up to go 24 hours a day to go for inspiration and start to learn this. And it seems to be working well. We have a lot of people who have addiction to prescription medications that find this to be more favorable than Narcotics Anonymous, which is terrific that they do have an option to get some work done and to understand that they can control their thoughts and their motivations and why they have this. And that's been a very positive thing for the people who are participating and continue to participate.
Excellent. And we had a couple callers on within the past week who have been exposed to and are building on the benefit of blending this set of tools and the reality management worksheet with a solid 12-step program and just boosting the effectiveness of both. Because when it's applied well, when it's understood well, the 12-step program has several fundamentals that are very much like the work that Michael and Jeannie are teaching.
Well, I always encourage, always encourage if they're going to AA or to NA in addition to this. And the issues that usually come up is they don't like the people, they don't like the program, they don't like where they're going, et cetera. They always come up with excuses, which, of course, are only that, they're excuses. But I always recommend that they participate. But then again, I have some young people and teenagers, and they find that the NA is probably not the best form for them. So that's the other issue that we're dealing with. And this is the only thing, I think, that they found that is able to help. So that's been very successful. But always, and as Michael says, everything, you need everything to together, and everything together is what allows for opportunity to start to feel better. I think that if anybody's listening, that the continuing with this work, continuing looking for other type of therapies such as NA or AA, which the sponsored program is, I think, is extremely valuable, since we don't meet on a weekly basis, on a frequent basis, and we don't have that sponsor, that those things are integral towards getting better. And, of course, this is a very difficult problem, because you tend to return back to your own old patterns of dealing with your upset and your pain, internal pain, with drugs and alcohol, and it's going to take a lot of work to remove that. So it's been very successful, and I hope to continue to call in with positive results that we see. And anybody who's listening with issues that they're hiding their pain with drugs or alcohol, then I can tell you for sure that you don't have to continue to feel that way. And listening to the show, and if you are listening, it's the greatest first step that you can do is to understand that there are options and opportunities for you, and to continue to participate, and you can start to feel better.
All right. Dr. Andraki, there's a question in the chat room that asks, can the brain serotonin levels be influenced by nutrition, exercise, and other lifestyle factors? In what way, and what holistic support is available?
And let me answer that by saying that I am not a neuroscientist, but I do know enough about neuroscientists to say that the only way that we could prove that is if we did brain biopsies. That means that we would have to get a human brain and take a piece out and to analyze that. Now, we can use animal models, and we can say, okay, we do mouse experiments, and we give them this, a whole bunch of this, and we can see the serotonin changes. And serotonin is throughout the brain. I mean, this is not one separate area in the brain that controls any one thing. It's a hugely important neurotransmitter, and it's throughout the whole body. It's in the gut. Serotonin is involved with migraine, headache. Very complex chemical. So we don't know the answers to this. And I think instead of looking always for nutritional or something you can do, I think that the most important thing that anybody can do is understand that they can control their output of their mind, and using Michael's work, and to understand that these thoughts and where these thoughts originate from are probably the single most important thing you can do. Now, eating healthy and exercise probably helps in a lot of different things. We know it helps with endorphins and other neurotransmitters. And so instead of trying to fixate on one certain thing, such as serotonin, and believing that you can take a nutritional supplement, getting back to the thought that if you take something, you can start to feel better, and saying that I can control what I'm thinking, and eating a healthy diet and exercising and doing everything I need to do to stay in harmony is valuable. I think that's enough for people to work on instead of spending a lot of money on supplements. Now, that's my thought, and people are going to differ with that, but I think that has a solid scientific basis.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I'm going to check out now. It was a pleasure to hear Jeannie and you on the radio, and all my regards and from Claudia to continuing the program we're doing it here, and everybody who's listening, I think that deserves the satisfaction to know that they're on the right course, that can make changes, and that the willingness to continue to look at these things and to listen is all that's necessary to make dramatic improvements.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We look forward to the next time you're able to do that. And we greatly appreciate your effort. We're holding you in a space of love and wait anxiously for the next time you call in with a good report.
Thank you.
Love
Thanks for everybody
you.
Who's listening.
Love to
Thanks,
you, Steve Jeannie. And Claudia. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have two more callers on the air.
All right.
Area code 347. That's a New York number. Do we have Richard?
Hello?
Nope. Hi. Who we got?
Okay. Is this Jeannie?
It is.
Oh, hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael. This is Ramona. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. And I wanted to say that I worked in a mental institution for like 15 years. And no one talks about the side effects, because a lot of times when you take antidepressants, they can actually make you even more depressed. I mean, they have terrible, terrible side effects. And so the remedies, like the natural remedies, like changing your diet, and I think even, like, I know that depressed people close the blinds, like getting sunlight, having sunlight shine on you, open up the windows, things like that, little things make a big difference. The other thing that I wanted to mention was I think that I'm having success in doing my sheet, because I had a dream last night that I went to my dad's funeral that I planned, like I was somehow helping to plan his funeral. But the fact of the matter is my dad passed away 10 years ago, and we had already planned his funeral. Just wanted to know, what did you think about that?
Well, what I talk to people about when they have dreams is a variety of things. The first one is, how did you feel when you woke from the dream?
I feel like somehow relieved. But I knew it meant something other than what was being played out in the dream, because my father passed away. So to plan his funeral, you know, on one level didn't make sense. But on
okay.
another level, you know,
well,
it does.
Well, one of the things that we would do working with this would be to explore the feeling that you had about the different parts of the dream and about how you felt when you woke. And you just said you felt relieved.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel relieved when you have a dream and you wake from it, it often is an indication that this dream was about internal work and progress you've already made. And so this is a dream that just confirms your peace of mind, your growth, your acceptance of what has been.
Okay.
If you have any kind of a negative emotion when you think about any part of the dream, that would be a good thing to do some worksheets on.
Okay.
So let's say you remember that in the dream you were planning your father's funeral and you had to go to the funeral home, and you remembered that you were really nervous or uncomfortable walking into the office where you had to plan your father's funeral, then you could do a worksheet on that energy of feeling nervous or uncomfortable in that scene from the dream.
Okay. I mean, I thank you so much because, you know, there were times when I had dreams and, you know, they made me feel even more uncomfortable and more confused. But at least I know now I could take out a worksheet. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And remember, it's not the dream that's making you feel anything. It's that when a dream happens, it's stirring up the negative emotions you've already been carrying around with you. And when you take out a worksheet and dismantle those emotions and those energies and those thoughts, you move on and live your life that next day even lighter with less baggage. This is literally about putting down bags of garbage, negative emotions, and hurtful energies that we've carried around for years.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was just going to ask if there's anything else we can support you with before we move on to the next caller.
I would like to have someone to work with me. And, you know, I asked a couple of people, and, you know, they're like, yeah, sure, I'd be, you know, that's something I'd be interested in. And I would like to work with you, but I don't think anything is going to come out of it because they don't know the work and I don't really know the work. You know, I'm doing the sheets, but I'm...
Okay, well, there's two things. One is listen to the show more, go back and listen to archives. The other thing is there are people like Jeannie who do phone consults for people to work with them. Jeannie, are you there?
I am. You can actually go to our website, and if you go to whyagain.com and then go down and click on Helpline, there are several of us that are listed on that. And you can tap in. It gives you our contact information and what you can do for private sessions. And then always, like Tim said on the show, we're here every day. You can call in as often as you want, ask your questions. And the big thing, too, is on our website, whyagain.com. That's whyagain.com. You can click on Download Worksheets, and there are two MP3s there, if you've not listened to them yet, of Michael actually walking someone through doing a worksheet. And he takes them step by step by step. And so you can print off a worksheet, and you can follow along, and you can see more precisely how it goes and how it works. And that'll help tremendously as well.
Okay. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Bye. Our next caller is area code 828. You're on the air.
Hi there, Jeannie and Dr. Tim. This is Magdalena from Kansas.
Hi, Magda.
Hi. I was really relating to what you were saying before, Jeannie, about wanting external circumstances to change until we can get to where, you know, do our work enough so that it doesn't bother us. So I appreciated that discussion a lot. I also, mainly what I'm calling in for is to offer an example to all of the listeners who are either just beginning to use the worksheets or perhaps have not begun to use the worksheets yet. And it's in connection with what Tim said earlier about changing the brain chemistry, especially he was referring to depression in that case. And I know someone who had probably at least 20 years history with deep clinical depression to the extent where he was on different medications. He was hospitalized in mental wards several times. He attempted suicide at least three times in three different manners. And he really did not, and, you know, went to therapy and who knows what else. And when he began working with Michael's forgiveness material, that is when things began to change for him tremendously. And so he's on no medication now. He doesn't go into depression anymore. Suicide is not an option. So I just wanted to put that in because his brain chemistry definitely changes each and every time he does a piece of forgiveness work, and he's very much aware of that connection and how it affected his depression. And the other thing I wanted to plug in or express some gratitude about was sometime last week, I think, Dr. Tim, you were you had talked about emotional freedom technique, EFT.
Yes.
I really appreciated hearing that because I find that that works very well with Michael's tools. So it was good to hear about that and have that kind of confirmation. So I'm with you. Everything we can do that helps.
Wonderful. Thanks for the comments. And it's always great to hear somebody else who's been able to apply these tools and their own higher intelligence to make their life better. And that's what this is really about, applying the tools. It's not really a philosophical or a theoretical argument. It's really just discussing the application of tools that remove anger, fear, stress, guilt, shame from my life, and as a result, my life is better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's it. That's it for me. And I'll open up the space for someone else to call in. And I wish you all so well. Send love your direction.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Magda.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we don't have another caller. We're down to about 3 minutes, but there is a comment in the chat room. The same person who was also asking about what was there some natural way or exercise or lifestyle change that could help with serotonin levels. And so I asked a question back and said, you know, okay, so what is the real issue here that you're wanting to address? Is it depression or your thoughts or what, you know, that you're concentrating on the serotonin issue? And they wrote back that it was mild depression had been a constant companion throughout my life. My favorite help is cardiovascular exercise and a bike and training at the gym. Also, prayer and meditation is important. You had responded back a little bit there, too. So I don't know if you want to add something for the listeners who aren't in the chat room. All of these things are good, but sometimes can it not be a distraction to be busy doing other things instead of actually, like, told them my number one answer would be worksheets. There's also a support group in this person's area, so they could go to the support group and have support there as well.
Yes, absolutely. Anything can be used as a tool for avoidance and denial. And for decades, even before I ran into Michael's work, I told people, I never recommend somebody just go get medication. They always have to work on what's underneath this. What have I learned from my parents? What have I inherited? What bad traits do I have? What bad habits do I have that I can undo? The medication doesn't cure anything. The nutrition won't cure anything. If I have a stuck point in me, if I'm holding on to past traumas, if I've inherited from my parents and great-grandparents traumas and anxieties and depressions, good nutrition is like putting a cast on my arm. It doesn't heal the bone. It just provides the situation, the status in which the bone can heal itself. If all the right nutrients are there, if there aren't any emotional blocks to it, then the bone will heal. The same thing with taking a nutritional approach or doing an exercise routine. If I've got unresolved emotions and traumas within me, if I'm blaming other people for what I'm feeling, I won't get better. I won't heal. I won't strengthen. As soon as I stop exercising, I'll slip right back into it. And we can do that. That's our choice. So please, bring a friend tomorrow. Have the best year yet of your eternal life, and thank you all so much, everyone who was listening and everyone who called in. And thank you, Jeannie. It's an honor.
Thank you, Tim. Bye-bye.
Evolving, continue
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.